Hi, Smooches. This episode is chaotic. We spend the first 10 minutes or so talking about SCOTUS, so if you need to skip it for mental health reasons, we don't blame you. After we pour ourselves some daytime cocktails, we recap Book Lovers by Emily Henry. If you've listened to our episodes on Beach Read and People We Meet on Vacation, you can already guess that we love this book. Spoilers ahead. Please donate to an abortion fund and support the critical infrastructure that helps people access reproductive care. And in the words of our prophet Olivia Rodrigo, to the Justices Samuel Alito, Clarence Thomas, Neil Gorsuch, Amy Coney Barrett, and Brett Kavanaugh, we hate you. Fuck you. Fuck you very, very much. Hi, Meg.
Hi, Liz.
I won't ask how you are.
Yeah, we both know.
Yeah.
How do I keep being surprised by the new levels of the hellscape that we're in?
I mean, I'm not surprised. And yeah. I saw someone say that people have been working just as long as the zealots have been working to build infrastructure and to prepare for this, because they knew that it was coming and people told us that it was coming. And that kind of brings me comfort, but it doesn't bring me comfort because of the fact that that is news to most of us.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can acknowledge that that is news to me.
Yeah.
Same. And I don't know how long it's going to have to be enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not at a point, and I don't know that I ever will be at a point, where I say I'm not voting for a Democrat, I'm voting independent, because I'm also practical and know that it's hard to get a third party anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not giving you any fucking money. What are these fundraising emails? You knew that this was coming. You could have ended the filibuster and codified this shit, and you fucking did it. So no, I'm not going to rush a $7 donation to the DNC. You can eat my whole ass.
Yeah. Mr. Meg's reaction was like, maybe we're just not voting hard enough, like, sarcastically.
And that's like the thing. Like, I know that that's, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, it's fine. It's just like, we were told to vote so that we would have majorities, so then things would allegedly get better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have those things that we said we needed, and still jack shit is happening. So why?
Yeah.
And how dare you capitalize on this as a fundraising opportunity? That's just disgusting to me.
Yeah, it is. Go do something about it because you have a majority. Go. Yeah. Like, it shouldn't be. Never mind the fact that six fucking assholes, including a drunken rapist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a cult member.
Mm-hmm.
Are able to decide this and also be like, and also a sexual predator is able to say, like, hey, maybe let's look at, like, the gay people too.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what rights they can take, we can take from them. But so six people have that amount of power, and then two people, fucking Manchin and Sinema, have all this power to make our majority fucking worthless.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't intend to talk about this today. I swear to you, I was like, I'm not even going to, because it's just adding noise. It's all anyone is talking about, and I don't have anything smart to say. I'm just fucking pissed.
Yeah, I'm there with you. I did see a post today from the New York Times that was like listing the states that don't have exceptions for preserving the life of the mother, don't have exceptions for rape, don't have exceptions for incest. And our state does not have exceptions for rape or incest.
Yeah.
So it's just like, ugh.
How it's so hard to prove rape in the justice system. Mm-hmm. It moves too slowly. Yep. And is rarely effective. And then, you know, if abortion is banned past 6 weeks.
Yeah, that's not happening.
So, yeah, what I was going to say when I interrupted earlier is that voting, we do still have to do it. It is the bare minimum. If we don't do it, it's going to make things worse. But doing it has so far not made things measurably better. And I'm waiting for the incremental changes that we've been saying this whole time. Like, it's incremental change. It's not going to be overnight. It seems like instead of incremental change for the better, it's just catastrophic change for the worse.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to do.
So we should mention that we're recording this at 10:30 in the morning, and I'm wondering, like, that's still considered brunch. So maybe I can just start drinking now.
I mean, I could put some whiskey in this cup. I have to buy Eric a new bottle of whiskey because his cousin bought him an expensive bottle as a thank you for helping him on a landscaping job.
Mm-hmm.
And
it became Wiz's bottle.
It became my emotional support bourbon. And he was even saying, like, before all this, he's like, hey, there's a dent in this bottle. This is my bottle. You have to ask my permission before you drink. And it's like, I might as well get used to asking a man for permission for everything. Fuck.
Oh, God. Well, this doesn't lead into our discussion of the book.
Should we start drinking? I will put whiskey in this coffee right now. Should we pause and go get drinks?
Yeah, let's pause.
Okay, pausing to get drinks.
So are you having bourbon and coffee?
Uh-huh.
What are you having? A Campari spritz.
Ooh, you're so fucking classy. What's in a Campari spritz?
So it's not a actual one, but so it's supposed to be a Campari club soda and like a Prosecco. And then like olives or an orange or whatever, but I didn't have Prosecco. So I used some dry vermouth and some lemon LaCroix and a lemon wedge.
Very nice.
Seems sort of brunchy.
Anyway, so you're drinking a Campari spritz, which is very sophisticated. It feels like a city person drink.
Yes.
And it feels like something Nora from Emily Henry's Book Henry. The bourbon is already kicking in. We're talking about Emily Henry's book lovers.
Last night I was drinking martinis, which is an homage to Nora. That is her, mm-hmm. and her namesake isn't the right word, but the character that she spawned, Nadine Winters, also drinks martinis.
Mm. Yeah. This episode's fucking chaos already. I want to do a thing. I want to describe your backdrop, your office. For the listeners, and then I want you to describe my backdrop for the listeners.
All right, here, I'll move out of the way.
Okay, so the vibe I'm getting is a little bit mid-century modern with some bohemian flair. Uh-huh. The walls are like a soft grayish color.
Yes, that was the name of the paint.
There is a lamp in the background that has three lampshades at different heights. Very tasteful. There is a mirror that is a parallelogram. No, not a parallelogram. It's a rhomboid. Is that what it is when it's a rectangle?
Well, the vertical sides are parallel.
Okay. The vertical sides are parallel, but there is a beige couch with complimentary textiles. And there's orange. There's orange and navy. There's like a cable knit cream. And there's a pillow that has a sort of abstract trapezoids in brown, mustard, beige, and gray. And there's a coffee table and a little altar. And you have a lovely brown leather chair that you podcast from.
Yes.
And it's all very tasteful and soothing. Now, describe my space.
Okay. Now I'm just going to seem extra boring.
No, I'm going to seem out of my mind is what I'm going to seem.
Okay, so you are in your office. Mm-hmm. You have two separate computer stations. So I can see one behind you, and that's where you do your work. It's got open notebooks and other books stacked on it. Lots of stuff on the base of the computer where it's raised up and that I can't see. And I know that you have like a very fancy keyboard back there that lights up and is rainbow. Mm-hmm. The walls are purple, mostly.
Mm-hmm.
You have some of your own artwork on the walls. You have a Captain America shield. Does the shield have a name?
Does the shield have a name like the hammer?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. There's a couple of other pieces of marble inspired art.
Mm-hmm.
And a mural that you boldly and recently just did, and I was very impressed by. It's like,
thank you.
These swirling, sort of like a, not exactly pointillism, but kind of
mm-hmm.
daubs of like white and pink and fuchsia and teal and yellow. Yeah. And then there's like some leaves and they're just kind of like starry night sky swirling mm-hmm. on the wall behind you and like around the corner. There's a mobile bookshelf that has just a ton of books on it.
unread books.
And I know that off to the side, you also have an altar and probably mm-hmm. still a bunch of plants by the window.
I have two plants in here now. I have my fiddle leaf fig by the window, and then I have I think it's called a pilea
okay.
on my work desk. And yes, I have the altar, and I moved my colorful collage to behind the altar.
Okay.
And off screen, there's a bunch of other stuff. This room is my masterpiece.
That's good, because you spend a lot of time in there. For work and otherwise, so you should like it.
Mm-hmm.
There also is like I think a box of Kleenex on the floor.
Yes,
like
there is, because there wasn't room on the desk for the Kleenex, so they went on the floor.
But anyway, why did you want to do this exercise?
Because I just think it's funny. I just think the contrast is hilarious to me. And I kind of feel like when people come on the podcast, like it's what they would expect.
Really?
I don't think so.
I guess I've never really thought about what they would think of the backdrop.
Mm.
But surely they notice, because I'm just other people's.
Mm-hmm.
This is chaotic.
Well, who fucking cares? Fuck it, it's free. You're not paying for it. Okay, so the book. God!
It's 10:45. And we're like, all right, so the book.
Okay. I'm so curious how much of this is actually going to make it in. It's gonna be like all of it or none of it. We'll just like put a notice at the beginning, like skip to this if you just want to hear about
the book. Not the like incoherent ramblings of women who've been driven mad.
Okay. Emily Henry's Book Lovers takes place in the same universe as Beach Read and People We Meet on Vacation. There are references to the books that were written during Beach Read.
Mm-hmm.
And it's told from the POV of Nora. She is a literary agent, lives in New York. She describes herself as a city person, and she has this issue where she has been dumped by every man she's dated and been dumped in the same fashion.
Mm-hmm. Which is like reminiscent of your classic Hallmark Christmas movie.
Mm-hmm.
So they go for city reasons. They have to go to a small town to do some bad stuff, like running mm-hmm. out of Christmas tree farm or a nice family bakery.
Yeah.
But while they're there, they discover that they discover their inner not city person.
Yeah. And
the arms of a very attractive local.
Yeah. They learn the true meaning of hard work and family and community and embrace a simpler life. And then they dump her, and she is the cold, frigid,
uh-huh.
as will come up later, girlfriend back home who is very conscious of not ruining her expensive heels.
Mm-hmm. Or Botox. Yeah.
Or Botox.
Yeah.
And
he's like, oh, let's go for a walk and look at the night sky.
Yeah.
He's like, I just got Botox. You know I can't do that.
You want me to walk? I'm in Manolo.
And she's not wrong.
She's not wrong. I think that Emily Henry's gift in this book is that she starts out with the thesis of we as readers, as people who love books, see the world narratively. Mm-hmm. We see people and situations through tropes.
Yeah.
And she wanted to examine how those tropes do and don't pan out
mm-hmm.
in real life. And the TLDR is that she herself gets her small town learning the meaning of life romance, but she gets it with a city person
mm-hmm.
yeah. who is her enemy at the beginning of the book.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about Charlie.
Charlie Lastra, dreamboat.
Dreamboat.
he is the product of a small town, but never quite fit in.
Yeah.
Always felt like he was a little too weird or a little too much or a little too different. So when he found New York, he found the place where he could live at full volume.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like smirky and pouty, and he has these like beautiful, thick, luscious eyebrows, and he wears like a limited capsule wardrobe, but it's all mm-hmm. like very high quality, expensive yes. pieces.
And Nora can look at what he's wearing and she can tabulate
She's like, cha-ching, 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 cha-ching. Like,
yeah. Because her part of her stress relief is doing her skin care and going on Net-a-Porter and looking at things that she can't afford
mm-hmm.
because I like that Emily Henry realistically shows a city person. Like, I've got some luxury
mm-hmm.
available to me, but I don't have unlimited funds.
Right. So his reputation is the storm cloud
mm-hmm.
or Midas, in the sense that like everything he touches turns to gold as a book editor.
Mm-hmm.
But like at what cost?
Because yeah. he's
not super fun to work with. He's got a reputation for being like super blunt and kind of moody,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
Yeah.
But Nora has her own reputation.
Nora is the shark. So she is the person you want as an author in your corner negotiating your contracts mm-hmm. and advocating for your manuscript. And she meets with Charlie on the day that she gets dumped for the daughter of the owners of a small town bakery. And the breakup call is so funny because Nora's like, so tell me about her. Tell me about the woman you're leaving me for that you met in the small town. And her boyfriend's like, what? Like, tell me about the woman. He's like, she's the daughter of the owners of the local bakery.
And she's like, wait a minute. You're giving up your life in this city, your amazing career, and me, your girlfriend, mm-hmm. for a woman named Chastity.
Who can her name was Chastity. Yeah.
Who can best be described as the daughter of people who own a hotel. So like, he's like, I've changed, Nora. Things have changed. Like, no, fuck you.
Yeah. So on the one hand, that kind of setup is the sort of thing from the Netflix Christmas movies that you make me watch every year
and I will never stop.
I think are terrible.
They are.
So I'm going in like snarking on the dude, like, oh, that's not going to work. That's going to last 6 months. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it also speaks to bigger romance tropes that I do buy into. Okay. And I have to question them in this context, like, okay, opposites attract. This guy's a billionaire heir and mm-hmm. she's the daughter of a baker in a small town.
Well, first of all, I never trust billionaires.
No, absolutely not.
That's your first strike.
Yeah. So like, it's not going to work out.
No. Like, what do they have in common?
There's such a power imbalance there. There's such a like difference in how you see the world that's not going to change in a month.
Yeah, correct.
You know, like, he's not going to understand her life and her struggles and her values.
Yeah, like, what is it that they're going to do on a Saturday night that they're both interested? Well.
Yeah. You can only fuck so much.
That's true. That's true. And it can only take up a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
So she has this breakup.
Yeah. And then she has to go into this meeting where Charlie Lasher is sitting there like, you're late. Mm-hmm. And he is not in a great mood either. And for very valid reasons also.
Mm-hmm. I forget the reasons. Was it related to his dad?
Yeah. He had just learned that like several days or like a week before, his dad had suffered a stroke. And that the family collectively decided not to tell him so that he wouldn't lose it. But he's trying to make a flight back to his hometown, despite knowing that at this point his dad is out of danger.
I have had family medical situations kept from me so that I wouldn't freak out. Trigger one from this book.
That seems like I would have a very hard time getting over that.
Okay, so he tells her that he hated this book.
Yeah.
That her client Dusty wrote, that it's, he read like 10 pages of it and mm-hmm. was like, this is trash.
Yeah.
And it's about a small town mm-hmm. and he's like, she's clearly never even Googled this place.
Mm-hmm. Sunshine Falls.
Sunshine Falls. And Nora knows that this isn't Dusty's best book, but she believes it can be a great book.
Mm-hmm.
It just needs the right person to believe in it.
Yeah.
And which this perspective was very valuable to me this week because of the stage that my own book is at.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, which hopefully will make me deal with critique better.
Yeah.
When it happens, like, you know, a book needs help
to yeah.
be great. So clearly this isn't going anywhere. And he gives her some bullshit about, you know, keep me in mind for future projects. And she knows that he doesn't mean it. So she's like, I'm going to start drinking now. I'm professional, but you know what? I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
And then fast forward to 2 years later, and Dusty's book has sold a million copies.
And is being made into a movie.
And it's a runaway hit. And she's just wildly successful. And now
she's like, Charlie, in your face, Charlie Lastra.
Yeah. And now Charlie is working at the same place that she works, or
yeah, I think they both I don't work understand. For a publishing company.
Yeah.
She is an agent. He is an editor.
Yeah. So I guess can agents be, I should know how agents work, but since I'm self-publishing, I've chosen not to. So whatever, skipping past that.
Yada, yada, yada.
And in the summer, publishing just grinds to a halt. Mm-hmm. And everyone leaves the city and she has nothing to do. And her sister, Libby, her younger sister, who's currently pregnant with her third kid, is a super fan of
Dusty's book. Once.
Is it like Once in a Lifetime or something?
Once in a Lifetime.
Once Upon a Time, Once Upon a Midnight Dreary.
They always refer to it as Once. So that's all it's like in my head.
So she's a super fan of Once and she's like, let's go to Sunshine Falls and let's take a trip and let's have sister time before this baby comes and I need to feel like a person.
Uh-huh.
And Nora will do anything and everything for her sister who she has raised since their single mom died. So another Emily Henry special, dead parent. You can always check that off on the Emily Henry bingo card. Someone's got a dead parent. It was January in Beatried. Mm-hmm. And Gus?
Yeah, his mom.
Okay. Okay. See, I forgot about Gus because Emily Henry only writes single POV. So those things don't stick out as much. And then in People We Meet on Vacation, it was the dude's mom.
Yes. Yeah.
So we go dead dad, dead mom, absent dad.
Mm-hmm.
And not then, real, not biological dad also.
Yeah.
Okay. They go to Sunshine Falls. It's kind of a shithole. And Libby has this list of small town romance novel activities that she wants to check off, including saving a small business.
Yeah, wearing flannel, petting a horse, hiking, maybe.
Going on a date with a lumberjack.
Sleeping under the stars.
Mm-hmm.
That might be it. I care.
Yeah. There's at least 12 items on the list.
Okay.
And she very quickly runs into Charlie.
Yeah.
And it turns out that Charlie is from there, which is part of why he thought Dusty's book was bullshit, because mm-hmm. he'd actually been to the place and it wasn't like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So she sends him some emails when she sees him in line at the coffee shop to try to determine if it is him or not, and ends up like talking about Bigfoot erotica, which I personally really enjoyed that conversation, because it's again like whenever they're together, professional Nora's boundaries kind of like dissolve because he brings out this sort of, I don't know, realness in her, I guess, mm-hmm. but like sometimes aggression.
Yeah.
Anyway, so she knows that he's there. He doesn't know that she's there. She's trying to dodge him, but then they go to like the one restaurant / bar in town. And that's when Nora's client, Dusty, sends the pages for her next book, which mm-hmm. is called Frigid, mm-hmm. about a very regimented film mm-hmm. agent who also only drinks martinis and has a lot of the same attributes as Nora.
Yeah.
And Nora's like spiraling. She's like,
yeah. And it starts out with, they called her the shark.
Yeah, right. Right.
And Nora, I think she finds out from Charlie that people call her the shark. So she's like, what the fuck? And my reaction would have been to curse out Dusty and dump her as a client.
but she's made Nora, her so much money.
Yes. But Nora is reading this and she's like, this is good.
But she's also spiraling because she's like, is this how people see me? Mm-hmm. Is this who I am? This is my longest client. Mm-hmm. And even she seems to see me this way.
Mm-hmm.
So she's freaking out. And she's like running to the bathroom at the bar named Papa Squat. And she literally slams into Charlie. And then what? I don't think it's, is it at that point where she says lion? But I don't think so.
I think, yeah.
And he's like, Nora. Hello? Stevens.
What the fuck are you doing here?
So she's in such a tizzy that she has to tell him about the manuscript. And he's similarly had a pretty bad day. And so they're like, let's drink.
Mm-hmm. And he reads the pages and he's like, fuck, this is good.
Yeah. Yeah. I want it.
They start drinking and then they start making out.
Uh-huh.
And they're gonna bone. And then what stops them? Something stops them. Is it just, she says, wait.
Uh-huh.
And he immediately stops.
She says that the reaction is like, he got tased in the crotch.
Yeah. And then he's like, I can't get involved, right as she's saying.
Probably something similar.
Something similar. Yeah. And then because of romance reasons, these two communications professionals are not able to make words at each other about their motivations and their intentions until the very end of the book. They just make assumptions about what the other person is thinking and feeling.
Yeah, that happens a lot in romance. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's like just a romance thing or if like just most people are really terrible at communicating. Like if you haven't been in therapy, like mm-hmm. do you just not ask questions?
Yeah.
I don't know.
So
the whole point of the trip, really, but the whole reason Nora wants to go, obviously to make Libby happy.
Mm-hmm.
But to kind of get to the bottom of this sort of space that's developed between them.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's like, I've got to remember why I'm here. Got to stay focused on work. Don't get too messy. But they keep getting, she and Charlie keep getting drawn to each other. Mm-hmm. And when Dusty's editor goes on maternity leave a little bit early, Charlie's like, mm-hmm. I get what I want. Mm-hmm. And I want to be on this book. And she's mm-hmm. like, fine. But Dusty is a very delicate piece of horse flesh. She should not be rattled. So all of your edits have to go through me to make sure they're properly soft and squishy enough.
Mm-hmm.
So begins their working relationship, which brings them into even closer contact with each other.
And they also have this bet going because Emily Henry is trying to check off as much trope goodness as she can.
Mm-hmm.
That if she completes the list that Libby has set out for her, then Charlie will sublet his apartment to Libby because his rent controlled apartment because he is working remotely right now so that he can run the shop because the bookstore that his family owns
mm-hmm.
because his dad had a stroke and he's got to keep his dad from climbing on top of ladders mm-hmm. and his
mom's more of a free spirit.
His mom's a pothead and can't be relied on to open the store every day because she kind of just opens it when she feels like it.
Mm-hmm.
And the store is about to go under. So Charlie has to run it. And he's like running it while working remotely at his job.
Right.
As an editor. And so the big reveal in this book, stop laughing at me. I'm getting there.
I'm just laughing at how unhinged this whole episode.
It's fine. It's perfect. Perfect.
I agree. I'm enjoying myself immensely.
So the big reveal is that Libby's husband, so she's trying to figure out what secret Libby is keeping. Yeah. I was thinking like this bitch has cancer. This bitch is pregnant and has cancer. That's what I was thinking because she kept talking about how she was pale and secretive and all this other shit.
Yeah.
It turns out that the secret isn't that she's sick or that she's getting divorced because she finds out that she's been talking to a family lawyer in the small town of Sunshine Falls. It turns out that Libby's husband has gotten a job in Asheville, North Carolina, and they are moving and they have purchased a house, hence the lawyer. And
well, the lawyer was actually just like someone who lives in town and could recommend a preschool for their kids.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. I thought that it was like a related to the house sale. Okay. And this whole trip has been Libby's way to try to ease Nora into the idea of her moving and possibly getting Nora to also move.
Right.
And I feel like this was so stupid because Libby knows her sister is a controlling person who needs a plan.
Mm-hmm.
And that easing her into something deceptively mm-hmm. is not the way to do it. She would have been better off saying outright,
yes,
my husband got a job in Asheville, North Carolina. We are going to move. Let's do whatever kind of checklist and spreadsheet you need to be okay with this.
Mm-hmm. I have a lot of feelings about Libby.
Yeah, me too.
Tell me about that. She's actually my vote for worst half.
Yeah, she's the worst person in this book. She is the villain of this book.
And like, there are things that she says that I can understand. Like that she just really wanted to win over her sister because she wants to be with her sister wherever. Despite mm-hmm. that being selfish, I can understand that. And also not wanting her sister to parent her anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I can get that. But the thing that really got me, besides like this whole just very unwise premise that she's gonna like lie to her sister for a month and secretly moved to a town, was mm-hmm. at the wine and pie party following the like community theater play rendition of the book Once, in which Old Man Whittaker was played by an 11-year-old. This is at Charlie Lastra's mom's house, by the way.
The party, not the community theater.
Right. Yeah. So they all have this party afterward where they all pretend that what they saw was good. And drink a lot of wine. And so she's
and then say how they really feel.
and then after a couple of rounds, the truth comes out. She's talking to Sally and talking about Sally's experience, which more lines up with how Libby sees like an ideal romance, which is that like she went off and had her fun. And then she realized that the small town and her small town love was where she belonged. Mm-hmm. And Nora's like, well, didn't you miss it? Didn't you miss the city? Didn't you miss like what your career could have been as an artist? And Libby's like, oh, this is so Nora. Our mom was the same way. She like ran herself ragged, and Nora's the same way. She has no life. She's just obsessed with her career.
Rude.
So fucking rude. And Nora is so upset that she like has to like run upstairs to like yeah. collect her thoughts because she doesn't cry normally, but she is feeling like panicky, you know. And how fucking cold is that? And to like embarrass her in front of someone that they just met yeah. a couple weeks ago and be like, my sister has no life, she has no emotions,
yeah,
when all her sister has ever done is like try to take care of her and keep her safe and keep her stable. And like, yeah, she only goes on one date. But that's yeah. so that she could get a free meal while she was paying for Libby's existence as a fellow yeah. teenager. So I'm like, and fuck you, Libby. And she does not ever say sorry for it. She's just
never
like, starts. So, you know, Nora is comforted by Charlie. And then she starts getting all these texts from Libby. She's like, where the hell are you? Hurry up. We got a ride to go home. Hello. I'm like, Libby, this bitch. Like, that was just really, really cold.
Yeah. I was very hurt by the fact that Libby just outright said how she saw their mother
mm-hmm.
when their mother was trying so hard,
yeah,
and Nora was trying so hard to shelter Libby mm-hmm. that whole time from how much their mother was actually struggling
mm-hmm.
and it feels insulting
yeah.
to Nora, because one, like, everything that she did to try to shelter Libby from it, she's finding out like, oh, like I ran myself ragged and you were fully aware
yeah.
of how messy things were. And also like, you're being disrespectful to the memory of our mother who was doing the best that she could.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't perfect, but she did so much to try to give us a good childhood.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that it stirs up complicated feelings for Nora too, because she had to be, as Libby's one solid point that she makes is that she had to be the dad.
Mm-hmm. She
had to be the dad.
Grow up too quickly. She had to co-parent when she should have just been able to be the kid.
Yeah, and that is how it is when you are the eldest and you are in a single parent household. That is 100% what my experience was.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I will say that, like, I'm certain that it's much worse in a single parent situation, but like for me and a couple of my friends who were also firstborn daughters, we also were treated like adults maybe before we should have been, to be the confidant for our moms.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So I am out on Libby. Yeah.
Fuck Libby.
But Nora is like torn because she's always done whatever Libby could possibly need or want. But like, when that means sacrificing the city that feels like her family and like the memory of her mom there, and finally the potential to work as an editor, which is what she wanted to begin with, like, how do I give all that up?
Yeah. So how did you feel? Because we talked about this with the X Talk, how someone threw in someone else's faces that they turned down their dream job to take care of someone else. And in that case, we were like, that's bullshit. Like, she didn't ask you to do that. We see Nora do the same thing for Libby. How did you feel about it?
I did not feel the same way that I felt about the X Talk, because in the X Talk, is it Rena? Rima? Amina.
Amina.
Amina was resenting her friend for that, and using it to lord over her to make her feel small and shamed. Whereas Nora would never have even brought it up, and if she wasn't on the defensive because Libby was attacking her.
Yeah. Like, and I feel like it was justified for Nora to give up her dream job for Libby because they were financially entangled in a lot of ways.
Yes. Yeah. They were, she was quite literally her guardian and caretaker. So we should mention that this, and it sets up Libby to be able to redeem herself a little bit and be like, you have to take this job now. Like, this is your second chance at your dream job. Their mother was always chasing her dream job and didn't get to have it. Like, you can have it, and you absolutely should. We should mention that this editor position is Charlie's.
Yeah, it turns out he's going to stay in Sunshine Falls. Charlie's going to stay in Sunshine Falls because he has to. His family needs him. And they talk about doing the long distance thing. They talk about, I think for a second, what if Nora were to move to Sunshine Falls? And it's like a non-starter.
But Charlie wouldn't stand for it. He's like, you have lived your life to make another person's life great, and you deserve the same thing. So I'm not gonna let you fucking blow up your life so you can be miserable here, because I'm miserable here and I'm like you, and so I know it's not gonna work for you.
He tells her that she should have everything. She should have the city, she should have the job, she should have the guy, she should compromise nothing. And if she wanted to be with him but the distance was too difficult, he would be totally fine with her getting her needs fulfilled in New York without him, and then just seeing him when she had time.
Yeah.
And he would be monogamous.
Yeah.
Pretty much. We love a simp.
We really do. I fucking love Charlie so much.
He wants this woman to take advantage of him and to disrespect him. More men wanting women to disrespect them, please.
More stomp on me, mommy.
More stomp on me, mommy. So they split up. She takes the editor job. She is doing amazing at it. And on December 12th, which was a day that every year she and Libby would go to the bookstore that basically raised them to honor their mother. They would buy a full price book because their mom would do that.
It's her mom's birthday.
Yeah, they're talking on the phone and Libby is there, not physically, but in spirit. And she says that she sent her a present and asked if she got it yet. And the present is Charlie. Shows up at the bookstore. And Sally, Charlie's mother, had said that she would never sell the bookstore or let the bookstore be run by someone outside of the family. But Libby is now going to run the bookstore because, as Charlie tells Nora, Sally doesn't think that Libby's going to be outside of the family for long.
Yeah.
Because Charlie and Nora are going to get married and be together forever and live happily ever after.
Yeah.
So Charlie's city like, yeah, as city people. So Charlie's like, I'm coming back to New York. I'm going to apply for some jobs and we're going to be in a relationship together. And my small town interlude is over. And then we see them in the epilogue happily, like, spending time in the small town visiting their family, Libby's children being the surrogate grandchildren of Charlie's parents, because Nora and Charlie are happily child free and intend to be forever. And they just get to be the cool New York City aunt and uncle who work in publishing and sleep with their phones at full volume. And that's the life that works for them. And they don't have to change anything about themselves. The end.
Yay.
I loved that.
Me too. Oh, I just love Emily Henry can do no wrong, really, in my eyes.
She really can't. It's like the whole arc of this book was not two people changing for a relationship. It was two people figuring out, like, no, I don't need to change.
Yeah. Two people who've always been made to feel like they're the wrong kind of person.
And they have to make sacrifices. And realizing that, like, no, I don't have to.
Right. With each other, they're just right.
Mm-hmm.
And Emily Henry is just, like, so fucking good. I don't know how she does it. But she also does this very specific thing in her books that I really enjoy, which is, like, you don't know exactly what happened with Charlie's ex-fiance. You don't know exactly what happened with Nora and Libby's mom. You don't know exactly what's up with Libby from the beginning, but you know that something is there, some, like, key piece that you're missing. And she just, like, brings you along and gives you a little bit more each time. And then you finally, like, it all clicks together. It's just so good. Okay, so let's talk about what we loved.
Okay.
Or a favorite scene.
I love the skinny dipping scene.
Ooh, it is good.
Yeah.
Would you skinny dip in an ice cold random pond?
Absolutely not.
I didn't think you would.
No, would you? You would.
Why do you think I would?
You would because you, first of all, haven't you?
Swim in a pond?
Yeah.
I tend to avoid ponds.
Okay.
Because they're small and they're usually more gunky. And then there's like creepy creatures.
Yeah. So I just feel like it's a Secret Life of Alex Mack situation. And I don't want to glow radioactive and become a puddle of radioactive goo. And also, I don't like being cold. Also, like, I don't want to get arrested for public indecency. So
I don't think there was much danger of that in Sunshine Falls. There seemed to be no police presence, which I personally enjoy.
Utopian. Yeah, because so often in these small town things there's, like, the local sheriff who, like, is everywhere. Omnipresent. So
I think my favorite scene is, so they've run into each other at the bar for the first time and they're tying one on, basically. And so they're, like, sitting at the bar bantering with each other and like they're facing each other on their bar stools and their knees are kind of like locking together in such a way. Mm-hmm. And he's saying, do you know that you do that? And she's like, do what? You get a little dimple, a divot here. Mm-hmm. When you, and he touches it when you lie. She was like, that's not my lying divot. And of course it divots because she's lying.
And then, the way he talks about how you can read her like a book.
Yeah. And so then there's a point where she's lying again about something, probably trying to just like play it cool, and he like grabs her chin at the divot and he's like, liar. I was like, take my body.
Use me as you will.
Yeah, I will send for you. I really loved the energy and the chemistry in that scene. It was just, gave me life.
I loved when he was reading the book, and this was before they even like had kissed or anything, and he talks about Nadine, the fictionalized version of Nora, as his crush.
Yes. Yeah.
He's like, I want this woman. And Nora's like, do you mean me? is this your way of saying you have a crush on me?
And that kind of, I, so this is not another favorite scene, but it's like a favorite moment when they're editing together on Dusty's book later, and she's like making notes on his notes and like tracking all the changes, and he's like, I've always wanted to see a shark attack up close, there's so much blood. I was like, this is delightful. I love it so much.
We had a disagreement about this when I was texting you about the book, because I said that this is a grumpy romance. Mm-hmm. Instead of a grumpy sunshine, and you said that Nora isn't grumpy, she's just grumpy by societal standards. I stand by it being a grumpy romance, and I think that that's a good thing.
I'm just saying that, like, okay, if we take it back to their first interaction, that fateful lunch where he mm-hmm. was acting like a total douche, he doesn't mm-hmm. say hi, he just says you're late, he like can't be bothered with the decency of like normal conversation, and she's working to be very professional. Mm-hmm. And I think that she is very professional, and so people's criticism of her is that she's cold. Mm-hmm. It's not that she's mean.
I think that it can be both. It can be that people's criticism of her is gendered and unfair, and also that she's grumpy and that that's her personality.
Okay.
I think that it can be that, like, it's her personality and it's fine, and her, how she is unfairly maligned because of society.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair.
So that's my take.
So
did you have any grievances?
I want to hear yours first, if you have
any. I just love dual POV. Mm. Like, I don't care if it's third person. I don't care if it's first person. I just want to be in both characters' minds mm-hmm. and know their motivations and see their reactions to the other person. And I just really love that. And Emily Henry obviously feels comfortable writing in single POV, and clearly we love her books and keep coming back, so it works for her. Mm-hmm. It's just, I really am so curious about the other side of it.
I see what you're saying. But I think that that's part of what I like about her books is like that if we had both perspectives, then we wouldn't have those tantalizing secrets drawing us toward the mm-hmm. end.
Yeah.
My grievance is that, like, is how it ties up at the end with Charlie showing up at the bookstore. Mm-hmm. I, in romance world, like that kind of gesture, fine. But I identify a lot with Nora mm-hmm. as a person. And I would rather he called me as soon as he found out and mm-hmm. told me about this new plan instead of waiting until he could like fly to New York and show yeah. up at this thing. Like, just fucking tell me and then I'll be happy mm-hmm. right then. And then we can make plans.
Yeah.
Like I'm not someone who responds well to a grand gesture.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's just me. It's not like that it's a wrong thing for the book, because otherwise I really don't know that I have other grievances, because that was incredible. You like a grand gesture.
I am realizing that what I like is not a grand gesture. What I like is a grovel.
You do like a grovel.
I like a grovel. A grand gesture. They were talking about this on Faded Mates recently. They did a grovel episode, and they said that some people think that a grovel is a grand gesture, and they think that they don't like a grovel because they think of a grand gesture, which is different, and they think of it as being an embarrassing thing. And I think of it as being an embarrassing thing. And I think of it as being a potentially unwanted and dangerous thing, because I've been on the receiving end of someone just showing up.
I don't like that.
I've been on the receiving end of someone just showing up and banging on my door of my family home when I was in high school crying and wanting to talk and wanting to be let in and having to have my mom call his mom and his mom call him and be like, you need to go because they're about to call the cops.
Yikes.
Yeah.
I don't like that. I mean, like,
I've always had a way. I make the boys go loco. It really is my own fault. It's my fault that they stalk me.
You've got to pull back on that love potion you've been administering.
Yeah, my pheromones are too powerful and they're just asking for
What they say in X Talk? Your raw sexual energy.
My raw sexual energy, even at 17, was too potent.
Ugh, gross. I don't like
that. For like a fucking 19-year-old man
ew.
To get a hold of himself.
No, I don't want any more details, because I'm just getting more upset the more than I hear. Okay. Honorable sizzle. Who do you want more of?
Sally.
Me too. Give me the Sally origin story.
Yes. It's very Mamma Mia.
Yeah, it is. And I kind of wish, I love everything that we have learned about her. I would definitely read that book where she's like coming back from New York to her small town love, even though we're like sort of debunking that with this book. I don't care. I would read it.
He leaves his fiance for her.
Yeah. And she's already 3 months pregnant with someone else's baby. Mm-hmm. And so love all this for her, you know. We stan a messy bitch in this house.
They are pariahs in their town for the longest time because of this sex scandal.
Yeah. And Charlie says that her move is to kill him with kindness and like win him all over by being so fucking nice. And I'm like, okay, I'd rather just like slash and burn. this whole town's gonna fucking slut shame me. Like, I'm gonna burn it to the ground.
So going back, I have another grievance. Whatever the opposite of an honorable sizzle is, like an honorable wet paper towel.
What's it called? A dishonorable wet fart.
A dishonorable wet fart is, what's his name? The cousin.
Shepherd.
Shepherd, the generically handsome, like...
Horse farm Adonis or stables, I'm sorry.
A horse stable Adonis with an engineering degree, so secretly intellectual.
And also a carpenter.
And also carpenter. Like
rocking chairs or some shit.
Every time he came on screen, so to speak, I was like, go away. You're very nice, but this isn't your book.
I liked it.
Go to your book.
I liked the constant reminder of like of the Hallmark Christmas storyline.
Yeah.
Like that is available and it's just not for her. It's not that she's like settling for someone who's less perfect because no one else is available. It's like she's finding someone who is perfect for her.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fine.
I, you know, this is so funny. So I did have like unwillingly, basically, I couldn't avoid this fan cast for him in my head. What's that single all the way? He's been in a number of Hallmark movies.
Is it the guy who was the love interest in Single All the Way who wasn't the best friend?
Yeah.
Who we want a spinoff for?
Yes, Luke McFarlane. Yeah. Yes, that's who perfect. I was picturing.
He's perfect.
I know. He can do that so well. And he, yeah. like, in addition to playing a very similar kind of role in Single All the Way, he's been in a number of Hallmark movies. Mm-hmm. Did you have fan casts?
Yes, I do. Okay. So, for Nora, I wanted someone with very sharp bone structure.
Okay.
And I wanted someone who could play focused and disciplined, and also be very engaging, and who you could see also having a very charming, funny, snarky side. So I chose Jessica Chastain.
Oh, okay.
And then for her sister, even though I think Isla Fisher is a couple of years older than Jessica Chastain, I think Isla Fisher could play her more free-spirited, kind of childish.
Yeah. She has a youthful energy.
For Charlie, when I thought Jessica Chastain, I immediately then thought about Oscar Isaac. But, as one does. as I do often. Oscar Isaac could work as Charlie. He rocks the professorial look very well.
Okay.
And he can, we know he can portray that sternness. But after recent evidence has come to light of why Chris Pine is the one true Chris,
which you have to share in the show notes, by the way.
I will share in the show notes. Chris Pine for anything and everything. Put him in everything
at every opportunity.
And then finally I have Lily Tomlin as Sally. And now I'm kind of wishing that, like, we could fan cast, like, the young Mamma Mia to Sally, but I don't know who I would cast in that role.
Yeah. I'll have to think about that one.
How about you? Do you have fan cast?
I do. Not for any of the side characters other than Shepherd. I probably would have done Libby if I liked her more.
Yeah.
But they do require a time machine. So the characters are supposed to be like 32-ish.
I aged them up,
which is perfectly fine.
Yeah.
I need to age mine up a little bit. So for Charlie Lastra, I want little Timmy Chalamet.
I'm trying to picture this. Okay.
I think he's got like, he's got the brows. He can be funny.
He does.
He can be tender and he can be angry. I think he would be perfect.
Okay.
And then for Nora. So I had in my head for a while, basically Cameron Diaz in The Holiday, because she like also has this inability to cry and is like criticized for being too work focused.
And she has a platinum blonde hair.
She does. But I landed on Hannah Einbinder. She's one of the main stars of the HBO show Hacks. She has a very sort of like brusque demeanor. She can do that sort of like wry, self-deprecating thing, but also like kind of be savage with other people really well. And she's not, I can see her doing the like not jiving with a small town, being more of a city person thing. And they're age appropriate to each other. They just need to be a little older for these roles because they're like 26 and 27.
So by the time that this gets picked up for film rights, they'll be just right. Yeah. She's also, I just noticed her birthday is May 21st. She is first day of Gemini.
Ah.
So What's Timothy Chalamet?
Michelle is December 27th.
Is that a Capricorn? I think he's a Capricorn.
I do not know.
I'm looking it up.
I'm an astrology phony.
You are. You don't even remember your sun, moon, and rising.
Nope. Still don't.
Yeah, he's a Capricorn. So he can naturally tap into the workaholic aspects yeah. of Charlie.
Also, just like his look and build would make sense that he like feels different from his like small town country construction carpenter family. Mm-hmm. Like that he would not just blend in.
Yeah. A little pale.
Mm-hmm.
Even though isn't he described as being olive skin?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Good fan cast. I like those a lot.
Yeah.
You always come up with like lesser known people, which I wish I could.
I don't think Timothy Chalamet is lesser.
No, but who you have for Nora.
Oh yeah.
Does not have the same level of recognition.
No, but I think she will. I think she's just mm-hmm. getting started.
Yeah. Do you have a recipe?
Yes, I do.
Oh, you do? Cool.
Yeah. Okay. So if you recall, there's a really sad incident where their family, when Nora and Libby are little, they're at the bodega and the mom is trying to buy a lime and she doesn't have enough money. And so she starts crying. And for Libby, that's just like a very damning moment of her mother. But she, I assume was buying the lime to make Libby's favorite cookies, which are corn and lime cookies. Mm-hmm. And then Nora, during this vacation, makes them for her. Well, I got a recipe, my friends.
Nice.
It's a shortbread, cornmeal lime shortbread. And I'll probably like type it out myself or copy and paste it and put it in the show notes because mm-hmm. it's on New York Times Cooking and they have a paywall and fuck that.
Boo.
Yeah. But it's like, I don't know, 7 ingredients, very simple to make. There's like 5 steps in the whole thing and they mm-hmm. look really good. And I'm definitely going to make them when we're done recording. Mm-hmm. They're made with cornmeal, but a lot of the comments say to use corn flour instead if you have it, and they have like lime zest in them, and I think I might add a little bit of cardamom in there too. Mm. And then you do like a lime glaze over the top, so it's like a sort of a crumbly shortbread, but I don't know, a little bit.
I love twist. Crumbly shortbread.
I know. Yeah. I do too.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah.
Okay, the only deck that I have nearby is the Millennial Loteria Gen Z.
Okay, we're going chaotic all the way through.
I kind of like using this as a divination deck. I have yet to use it for its intended gaming purpose.
Mm-hmm. I've never played.
Yeah, I've never played the Loteria game. It's basically bingo, mm-hmm. but you know, at some point I'll use this the way that it was intended. Okay. Cards blew out. Let's see. Okay, 2 fell out. So first we have El E-Boy.
Okay.
And then we have El Gatekeeping.
Okay.
Okay, publishing is a gatekeeping thing.
That's true.
El E-Boy, I'm going to sit on that for a second. Then this other card flip forward, El Cake.
Okay.
And it's like a peach emoji.
Implying cake. That it's like cake, your cake, your ass.
Your butt, your ass.
I'll say with cake, they really got to have their cake and eat it too. Things worked out finally in a way that benefited and worked for everyone in the situation.
Yes, they did. El E-Boy makes me think of counterculture,
mm-hmm.
and they are in a way counter to what the culture wants them to be.
That's true. Yeah.
You know, as city people. And El Gatekeeping, they have access to this realm
mm-hmm.
that normies don't, as being book people. It puts them automatically in like an elite category.
Yeah. They don't strike me as people who are going to have a problem with capitalism as an institution.
Yeah. I'm going to pull a couple more. El makeup tutorial.
Okay.
And La Ringlight. Yeah, the vibe I'm getting is just like, keep doing what you're doing. Keep gaslighting, gatekeeping, and girl bossing in New York. And, you know, that's the ticket. Nothing, no deeper advice. Just.
Yeah, because they've already had to live through a lot of different lives. Yeah. And the whole thing is that they don't have to be different now.
Yeah. I love that for them.
I do too. No, it sounds no judgmental, girls. But
just yeah. Just keep doing what you're doing. I kind of love leaning into like, yeah, you're just going to keep, they're not scumbags. They're not bad people. No. They're just like them, and that's fine.
I'm pretty much pro self-acceptance. So
yeah, very nice. All right. Anything else to add? Thank you for listening to this chaotic episode. We're sending you love and strain.
Yeah.
From what little we have, because they're not going to win. We're not going to let them. And I don't know how we're not going to let them, but we're not going to let them. Because wouldn't that be some bullshit?
Yeah, it really would.
No, we're not going to let them win. So we'll have all the links to our social media in the show notes. Can't wait to see what Emily Henry comes out with next.
I always pre-order whatever is coming from her because it's all magic.
And I would love to see like a reunion of characters now that we know that Charlie was January's editor. Like,
pretty cool.
I think that would be interesting. Until next time, air kisses. Mwah!